For those of you who are visiting with us, we have been discussing over the past several months what we refer to as disciplines for the disciple, ways to exercise yourself spiritually so as to grow and strengthen yourself in your Christian walk, become more mature, stronger as a child of God. And we have covered a number of lessons up to this point, a number of disciplines, spiritual exercises, including prayer, meditation, fasting, singing, and fellowship. And in fellowship, we specifically were referencing the joint participation in God's work, including worship and evangelism, edification, things such as that. It's got us to a lesson on the subject of giving. The last couple of weeks, we've been discussing the subject of giving. And we emphasized in our study last week the example of Macedonians that's reported in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We didn't cover a lot of material. We discussed the material we had fully, but didn't cover a lot of it. So we're going to continue that discussion this evening. So if you will, begin reading with me there in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and of their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. So those first five verses basically are going to be the center text of our discussion for probably the remainder of the evening. And I'll just review the point that we make concerning this example by stating that the writer of the curriculum that we are studying emphasized the Macedonians as a great example of giving. He puts it in par excellence in regard to the example that they give here for a number of different reasons. The reasons that is given. Tom, would you mind cranking that down just a little bit? Just to your left a little bit. The reasons that are given with regard to this is that they gave sacrificially, they gave joyfully, they gave voluntarily, they gave persistently, and then they gave themselves, which is, I think, the key point that we want to make, to have a full understanding of what God expects of us and why it is that the Macedonians serve as such a good example for us. But let's just make note of the fact that last week we discussed the sacrificial giving of the Macedonians and the fact that they were poverty-stricken themselves. And yet, because of the great distress that existed in Judea, they were willing to give even from their poverty, great liberality to help those who were in need in Judea because of famine. And so this statement in chapter 8 in verse 3 that they gave even beyond their ability, and they were given beyond what they were expected to give. And he makes the final point that the best giving comes from those who cannot afford it. So this is one of the points that is being made. In other words, you're not giving of the excess, but rather of the very essence. And of course, the example that is made is in Luke chapter 21 of the poor widow, who Jesus, when she gave the two mites, he said that she has given more than they all, because they have, in effect, given of their excess, for she gave all that she had. So sacrificial giving is something that is certainly a wonderful example for us. Now, the second one we want to make note of is the fact that their giving was joyful. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 2, we are told that in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and the poverty abounded in the riches of the liberality. So they were very happy or joyful in the fact that they had opportunity to give and to help those who were in need. This joy in giving is a sign of maturity. We wanted it to really emphasize that. And in fact, I think that in a discussion I had with Ron after the classes. Oh, Ron, would you like to make that point again for us so that I'm sure you'll word it better than I'm trying to reword it for you?
Basically, what I said was we should not give until the first because we need to give until it feels good.
Okay.
Because then we get past our own greed, past the unwillingness to give, on into the joy of giving.
And that phrase, give till it hurts, is one that's kind of popular in our culture today. People use it for fundraising, things like that. And you've heard it used quite often with regard to the first day of the week contribution given among God's people. It's not something that should hurt. If it hurts, there's something that is amiss.
Then we need to go further.
Go for it. That's good. Very good point you made there. I want you to notice the passage that is very close in this case to the 8th chapter. We're in the 9th chapter, just one chapter over in verse 7. He's actually beginning in verse 6 concerning the concept of giving. And of course, that's still the context of his discussion. The example of the Macedonians, verses 16 and following, he talks about the purpose of the collection that it is for the saints in Judea. He discusses in the first 5 verses or so how the gift will be administered, that they had offered, or that they were to offer the great things as well. And then in verse 6 he says, I say this, that he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And so this concept of cheerfulness, the concept of joy, as you give sacrificially, as you give voluntarily, as you give of yourself, that God also requires that joy and that willingness on your part. It's something that is certainly, again, a good example. And again, a sign of maturity. If an individual does not begrudge the offering that is made, but rather is willing and happy to give it because of his understanding of God's blessings, because of his desire to be a service to his master. Those things are things that are significant indications that person has gained a modicum of maturity. He's grown to the point where he can do that. And also would be something that would be a sign that the amount or the effort that is made is something that would be in keeping with God, what God would be pleased with. So the concept of joyful giving. Now, if you look at it, if you do have the outline, you don't, I don't think you have any problem following, but he asked the question, how is it, in effect, that the Macedonians would reach this point where they would be so cheerful, joyful in giving despite their poverty? And there are 2 points that he made. The first one is the one that Phil read as we began our time together this evening from Acts, the 20th chapter. And that it is perhaps the Macedonians were joyful, had the ability to be joyful in their giving because they understood the value that accrued to them as a result of such efforts. In other words, one who gives is one who receives a greater blessing than one who receives a gift. The Apostle Paul deals with this same principle in his letter to the Philippians. When Epaphroditus was sent by the church in Philippi to come to minister the gift that they had given to Paul, Paul was very grateful for the gift. But he made clear to them that while he appreciated the gift and it was helpful to him, that he could have done without it. He said, I know how to abound and I know how to be abased. Whatever state I am in, I have learned to be content. So Paul said, I can use it, but I didn't have to have it. But he said, I'm happy, though, because of the benefit that you receive in the use of it. So the Philippians, in fact, received the greater blessing. And there is, I think, a great deal to be said about that. Because an individual who is on the receiving end, especially of monetary assistance, say that you're in a difficult state, someone comes to you and they give you money to help you through a difficult time. It's certainly a blessing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a helpful thing to you. But it is, after all, only money. They are only material possessions. This is only our physical life that we are living upon this earth. These things ultimately have no bearing on eternity. I'm reminded, you remember last Sunday discussed the rich man Lazarus in Luke 16. And the rich man fared sumptuously every day while he lived on earth, where Lazarus desired only to be fed from the crumbs, or of the crumbs, which fell from the rich man's table. But after they died, we're told that the rich man awoke in torments, but Lazarus was comforted in the bosom of Abraham. And when the rich man asked about it, you'll remember that Abraham said, in effect, that in that life, he received his bad things and you your good things. But now in this existence, after death, now Lazarus is receiving his comfort, and the rich man received his just due as well. So it's not about this life, ultimately. So, if a person offers me some material help, and this is a spiritual work that is being done, I accrue the benefit of material gain. They accrue the benefit of spiritual value or worth, in that they have done what God expects and have shown themselves to be giving and loving. And that reward is one that is more eternal and of greater worth than what I receive in receiving physically. So that's a good point, and perhaps the Macedonians recognize that. Yes, we don't have much. We are in poverty, and we don't have much to give, but I'm going to not only give, but beyond what I'm capable of giving, because after all, it's not about this, the money. It's about accruing the benefit of spiritual blessings as a result of my obedience to God. So that's one principle that is alluded to. The second one is one that, and perhaps there would be some discussion on this, that is a bit more tenuous a connection. He said perhaps they took to heart the teaching of James in James chapter 1 and verses 2 through 4 as to the value of persecution. As to the value of persecution. Now, it is true that James deals with that. You'll notice in verses 2 through 4, he said, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, and let patience have its perfect work, which may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." So, James is indicating that though trial persecution is not something that is an easy thing to handle, it is something that has benefit and is spiritual benefit. But can anyone touch on how it is that James' teaching on persecution would impact the Macedonians in the context of 2 Timothy? I think I know what he's saying, but I just wanted to ask if anyone else made that same connection.
It's just comparing burdens. One burden is placed on you by somebody else. Persecution, the burden that 2 Corinthians 8 is placed on themselves, but it's a burden that they suffer for the benefit of Christ.
Okay. Good. So it's not a persecution per se. I mean, it's a tribulation. And it's kind of interesting that it would be, in fact, a self-imposed, as Justin said, a self-imposed tribulation. In other words, they already were poverty-stricken, but they were making it worse for themselves by offering up this gift to the Judean saints. And but again, what's it all about? In suffering stoically and being patient and enduring during those difficult times, then they actually are benefited spiritually as a result of allowing patience to have its perfect work and return as a result of that. Okay. Anybody else want to add anything to that idea? Yes, Thomas.
I was going to say, they're not necessarily making themselves worse off, because God says they're taking care of, and by giving like they did, as you mentioned, the Philippians are another group that came to mind that gave, even though Paul said they didn't give because they were so wealthy. Yet they did very well for themselves. And they did very well for themselves in large part because spiritually, their heart was in the right place. There was a preacher that was growing up, when I was growing up, that was asked to preach on giving. He said he didn't really like to preach on giving too much because he felt like if you were a Christian, then you would want to give because it was part of your attitude of helping give back a portion to God spiritually. And so that good Christians didn't need to be prodded to give. that they were giving anyway.
Yeah, I kind of have the same feeling toward a lot of things in regard to admonitions. It becomes necessary for elders, for preachers, whatever the circumstances may be, to give admonition to Christians. And when I do that, I think to myself, you know, I wish that I didn't have to do that. I don't want to have to do it. But good Christians should be attending. Good Christians should be sharing the gospel. Good Christians should be studying. Good Christians should be praying. Those are things that I think that's part of being a Christian, living moral lives and things like that. But so often, and of course, this is the reason God gave preachers and apostles and elders and teachers, as indicated in Paul's letter to the Ephesians, so that the saints will be equipped, and so admonition can come. But yeah, I mean, and for a preacher, it can be somewhat uncomfortable as well, because they're making their living through the preaching of the gospel and are dependent upon the support of the brethren. And from time to time, worldly-minded individuals may accuse them of having an ulterior motive for preaching that. And I think a lot of preachers are a bit sensitive to that possibility. Justin, do you have a question you say?
Back in 2 Corinthians 8, what's being referenced in verse 8? And he says, I speak not by command. What is he saying? It isn't a command.
I took that to mean, and I think that in the text, once it's down into, you may not have your hand out with you, but under letter C, in this regard, the next example that is given is the fact that they gave voluntarily, the voluntary giving. And this is something I actually have, I have a little phrase written down that says, okay, they gave voluntarily, but that does not mean that it's optional to give in the sense of giving back to the Lord. But it does seem that in this particular case, that the example of the Macedonians is an example of going above and beyond what is required. And so the Macedonians were not giving in the sense, as far as whether it's the amount or what was accomplished by the Macedonians, was not something that they were compelled to do, but it was something that clearly was the impetus was their efforts on it in their regard. And perhaps in this example, he is calling upon the Corinthians to be voluntarily willing to do so as well. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit more in the larger point when we get to that next point in the discussion.
Yeah, I had a thought on this reference to James, if you had it. You're not through with that yet.
Yeah, go ahead.
When things are going well, and we kind of expect a paycheck every week or every 2 weeks, or whatever, sometimes I think we kind of forget about the providence of God, his providential care. You just kind of expect we're going to have enough to eat at the end of the day, you know, or 3 squares, and we don't have to worry about it too much. But when you're in a dire straits, like some of these people were in Jerusalem and other places, kind of a wake-up call, that you're more aware of God's providential care. You know, and here you've got these Macedonians and others who were able to participate in that. You know, you don't know if you're going to have enough to eat, and here somebody shows up from out of town with a bag of money to help you buy something. That's going to make you a little stronger person, I think, a little closer to God. And here these Macedonians were having a part in that. They were able to kind of lift someone else's spirits, which is bound to give them more patience, you know, to think, okay, God is taking care of me after all. And that's kind of what I see in this reference to James.
And, you know, Tommy made a similar point with regard to the fact that, they understood and recognized that God would take care of them. What comes to my mind in that is the text from Matthew chapter 6. And actually, as we get into continued point, it comes up that the 6th chapter of Matthew, a lot of part of that section is under the last point in the section, concerning the promise of Jesus, that if you seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, the needful things will be added to you. The needful things in Matthew chapter 6 has reference to the daily bread, the what is required to live in your life. And God does not leave such sacrificial giving unrewarded. God takes care of His people. And it's certainly probable that, certainly so, that the Macedonians would be aware of the fact that if they gave in this particular situation, God would take care of them. So that's a good point to make. So that's an important consideration in this idea of giving. And again, the call is giving. Anybody else have any questions they've heard? Yes, Tom.
Just real quick, I don't want to go into going back to the question we had about verse 8. I think it kind of goes back down to verse 10 because they kind of go together. But again, he says, I'm giving you advice that not only is it good, but it's good for you. It'll help you be a better person, be a better Christian. And so I think the not speaking by commandment in verse 8 goes along with the advice that he's given. That makes sense.
We can go on and read a bit more when we get into the concept of voluntary giving. Yeah, that's one thing that kind of comes to mind. That I do think that there is a requirement that is given. As far as the responsibility of a congregation to do the Lord's work. And it's something that perhaps is even more so in our day and time with the standards that we have than we live kind of on the money standard instead of bartering, like it might have been the case in times past. But the Lord's work is important, and there is a work that God has given congregations to do, and the work of evangelism, the work of edification, the work of benevolence, those three we've discussed on many different occasions. And there are responsibilities that congregations have for their own. I think that comes to mind the widow indeed in 1 Timothy chapter 5, the serving of the Grecian widows in Acts chapter 6 in Jerusalem. These are examples of that. But what we do recognize is that in the autonomous congregation and the set of that congregation, the oversight of the work is under the auspices of an eldership. We have an eldership here at Westside, and decisions have to be made. And the decisions that have to be made, first of all, we take care of the work that's to be done here at Westside, and the monies that are given on the first day of the week, those things are accomplished. But there are other needs that far surpass our abilities to fill outside of our congregation, both in the realm of evangelism as well as the realm of benevolence that come up, to where, we literally get requests from preachers to support them in the good work of preaching, legitimate requests from men who deserve support weekly here at Westside. And the elders, using discretion and wisdom, determine the best of their ability with the input of the members as to who we're going to support and how much money we're going to use in the support of those things. And in a sense, it could be said that it's optional as to whether or not we as a congregation support a particular work. But the work must be done. And that's the point that I want to make in this next section with regard to voluntary giving. This is something the Macedonians did and were freely willing to do because of how great the need was in Judea. Despite their poverty, it was worse there. They gave freely and willingly, voluntarily, so that what was lacking could be taken care of. And it was something that was very much appreciated by Paul, and he encouraged other churches to do. But to say that the reason I bring this up is because there are some who take that view, is that that giving is just inherently voluntary. That if you don't want to give in the sense of return a portion of what you have earned and what you have obtained back to God, that's fine because it's not a commandment. It's just something that is expected to be accomplished through volunteering. If you don't want to volunteer, you don't have to. And I'm sorry, but I think that that the concept of giving is a duty of Christians, and we do have that responsibility. And I think there are a number of passages which indicate that, even the reference that is made in these verses, beginning in verse 8 and following, concerning the first epistle that he wrote to the church in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Because if you look, and you just go back a few chapters to that, you know, so it's the previous epistle, but notice in verses 1 through 4, when he said, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. And this laying by in store allows the work to be done, and of course the context here is benevolent work that was done for the saints. So there is some discretion in that regard, but the discretion doesn't go so far, and that's why I put that in parenthesis. I wanted to make sure at least it was said that when we talk about the voluntary giving of the Macedonians in regard to extent, in regard to the nature of their sacrifice and such, that it was done willingly, they were not compelled to do so. Dick talked about last week the example of Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5, who had a portion of land that they sold. Peter told them after they had lied about what they had done in order to appear more generous in the eyes of men, and said, it was your land, you can do it what you want. They weren't compelled to sell and give the money to the common treasurer. That's something that they chose to do, so they had some discretion in that regard. But that doesn't mean that there is not a requirement, something that God expects of us with regard to these things. And I think that 1 Corinthians 16 is an example, but there are other people through this. 2 Corinthians 9 would be another example of that. These instructions are given as to what God expects of us as Christians as we get back to. Alright? So that talks about, that basically covers joyful giving and also voluntary giving, because I jumped ahead to 1 Corinthians 16 and read that. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 12, you'll notice that if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have. God will accept the fact that you may not have. He only expects of you what you do have and what you are able to give. But there has to be first that willingness. And that's where the sin lies, is an unwillingness to do for God and to give and to help others. There needs to be that true willingness. All right. Comments, questions? Yes,
well, just something I was thinking about as we were going over sacrificial and joyful giving is kind of an analogy that makes sense to me. I don't know if it will to everybody. But when I exercise a lot, and I've been doing that lately, you get a certain soreness in your body. And you think most people are like, want to avoid pain at all costs. But that's sort of a nice feeling, that little bit of soreness that you have. And I've talked to other people that exercise, and they like that too. You can kind of feel your muscles, the ones that hurt just a little bit. And while it's a good feeling to hurt, it's kind of a strange notion. But I think it's maybe a little bit the same way with the giving. You know, if you give enough so it makes a difference to you, then you can feel it in your budget. It's kind of a joyful thing. At least it works for me because I could buy a lot of stuff with what we give, but I get more joy out of giving it than buying stuff with it. You know? Although it puts a dent in the budget. You notice it, but it's okay. It's like that little bit of soreness thing that I have all the time, you know, in my muscles. So.
Good, that's a good illustration. Dick?
As we can tell here, that the Macedonian and the other Gentile Christians, they were mainly giving here to help the poor Jewish saints in Judea and Jerusalem, and even though it's not covered here, it would fit. So if we go back to Romans about the good olive tree and the wild olive tree and how some of the Gentile Christians were boasting, well, the branch was taken off the good olive tree, so we the wild Christians wrapped it in. And Paul writing there says, well, don't you boast on that, because if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't have anything. But also, Paul used that in the giving, when I don't remember where it is, some of the Gentiles there, that you give to help the Jewish Christians there, because it's through them why you have the gospel, and that's your soul depended on coming up to the Jewish. I don't exactly remember that, but I don't discover that.
Well, that's a legitimate point to be made in the fact that the racial tensions that existed between the Jew and Gentile in the first century certainly had a parallel in the church and caused a lot of problems in the first century. And in his epistle to the Romans, he was basically talking to the Gentiles first and then talking to the Jews second, and trying to get them to have a better attitude more toward one another and to be appreciative of the other. And that would certainly be an example of that, is the nature of the gift that they gave on this occasion, to show their appreciation for the Jewish brethren. So certainly a gesture of goodwill in that regard. And expressions of fraternity that is something that, again, it's far too lacking when you consider racial differences and tensions, even going into our day and time with regard to different races and such. It's an indication. I mean, you think about it, we could take as an example, let's say that, and there have been a number of them in the last couple of years, that there is a hurricane that hits in the Philippines. And the devastation is felt by the churches there, and they're destitute and in need. And so you have Americans that send monies and are very generous in helping them into overcome that. But that is an indication of how much you appreciate them. And despite the fact that there are different cultures, different nations, different circumstances, that we have that. That fraternity, we're brethren in Christ, and God is our mutual Father, and that's something that is shown in having that concern and care for them. And that was certainly something that often was lacking between the Jews and the Gentiles, and was even in the church involved in the first century. Yes, Jerry.
You know, I lived down in Longview, and where East Texas oil field was, and the Longview congregation, Brother Aiken, was a member there, and of course we know him, the Aiken Foundation. And there's no telling how much money that he gave as far as the Lord's work was concerned. And we rode from Longview into Dallas with him one time in the snow on the ground. My grandfather passed away, and my daddy talked to him quite a bit. And I guess there probably never was a finer man than Brother Aiken. As far as I know, I never heard anything bad about him. But over Gladewater, which is 10 miles away, there was a fellow over there that they struck oil on his land. He was quite wealthy. And the congregation he was a member of, he only came took the Lord's Supper and to make his contribution. And then the other times he'd come would be when they had a business meeting where he wanted to tell them what to do with that money that he was giving to them. Well, they should have withdrawn from him. They should have just run him off. But instead, I just let him come and do that because they didn't want to give up that money. Yeah. That congregation did stand for the truth when it come down institutionally, but they never did change their mind on letting, and they continued to let that guy just come in and take the Lord's Supper. And
there are a lot of congregations over the centuries that have had problems like that.
Yeah, but they just didn't want to give up that money.
Yeah, I think of Diotrephes and John's epistles, same type of situation and circumstance. By the way, just as Brother Gallman mentioned, Brother Aiken, some of you may not be familiar with the Aiken Foundation. It's simply a wealthy Christian who, when he died, established an endowment to support preachers after his death. And the Aiken Foundation that was established has supported many, many men preaching the truth over the years. Just the legacy of that particular individual. The interesting thing about it, a certain amount is part of the bylaws of the foundation, is it was established, a certain amount, and these are his wishes, as It's his money to disseminate as he desires, but are earmarked for Texas churches, Texas preachers preaching in Texas and working with Texas churches. So there's an example of showing his esteem to his brethren in Texas. And I know some of you who have moved in from other places, you still don't understand why Texans are the way they are, but it's just the way it is in that sense. There's that appreciation for their own state in that regard. And he was certainly that one.
So in Acts 2,
the what?
In Acts 2, it says that all the believing were on the same place and had all things in common. They sold their possessions and belongings and divided them to all according as everyone had need. And most of the scriptures about collecting are about poor Christians. They're about evangelism. Evangelism is certainly important, but the majority of them are about poor Christians. And in the case of the Corinthians, he mentions that they were in a bit of a surplus then. They weren't like the Macedonians. They weren't poor. They were doing quite well. And so they should have even more ability to send money down to Judea. I worry that sometimes we lack that a bit. It's a bit annoying because there are so many cons and other things that happen in this day and age, and you don't want to send money over to wherever and it goes to slave trade or some other kind of thing. And so what they were doing back then is they were collecting this money, and he talks about Titus and of course himself, and they're going to take this money back and they're going to give it to the elders. And it was very clear the purposefulness of it. And it was also very clear the avenues of the money. It wasn't a matter of we're going to send this money down and it's going to be given to a bunch of different congregations, and we're not really sure how it's going to be divided. When they were collecting the money, both in Acts 2 and then in Acts 5 with Ananias and Sapphira, they understood what it was. They were distributing according as everyone had need that was right there. When they were collecting the money, both in 2 Corinthians 8 and in 1 Corinthians 16, they understood, we're collecting this money, we're going to give it to Paul, Paul's going to go down there, he's going to give it to the elders are going to distribute that money. I don't see any place where they pooled up money without a purpose, and it's not necessary that you have a purpose set up in very, very specific terms. We are not want for poor Christians in the world. We can say, we're going to collect this money, we're going to find the right way to route it. And I guarantee some of those Indian preachers over there that you met, Chip Foster, came, that if we gave money to one of them, that they could get it to a place of people they know, that they know it can be used correctly. And I've been at some congregations that have pooled up amazing amounts of money, like, getting on towards $1 million. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, that doesn't really work. I mean, in 1 Corinthians 16, when he said, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store. First of all, there's some question as to whether they were actually pooling their money in one place, because they didn't have banks. They didn't open up a church bank account. And some say that the lay by him in store meant each person was collecting their thing of money. Everyone brought their collection of money, so they didn't have their contributions or whatever. But when they gathered up, I lost my train of thought.
By the way, I don't agree with that position, but I do know that's a good position.
But when they gathered up that money,
they utilized it, and it wasn't something, like I said, it was.
It wasn't something that they pulled up indefinitely without a purpose.
Right.
It was something they pulled up because, people wired money to Africa. It was something they pulled up because someone was coming to courier that money. And I very much worry about places. The two biggest things I worry about in money with regard to the church is, one, that people pool up money, and two, that people go into debt. It drives me insane when I watch a congregation go $250,000 into debt to build a church building when they could have just as easily met in the community center or something
and collected the money and used the money when it was available.
Yeah, and
it didn't struggle.
The people need to keep in mind, and I can give you a number of examples of that very thing happening. What we need to recognize, and sometimes this brethren have a problem with this, is that it's the Lord's money. It's not our money, it's the Lord's money. And what work He desires to be done should be done. And it's not doing any good unless it's being used and utilized. And sometimes we forget that. I'll just give you just one example, just as an indication of this. When I first started preaching at Crescent Park in Odessa, in a kind of a two-preacher arrangement with an older preacher, the decision had been made to support me in the large amount of $200 a week. That was how much money that I was going to get in the work that I was doing. And I know it's been a while ago, but it still wasn't a lot even back then as far as to live on. And so $200 a week, and the elders made that agreement with me. And which, of course, in 4 weeks, four Sunday months is $800, but every fourth month there's a five Sunday month, which means that's $1,000 in that week, $1,000 a day. And the first time we had a men's business meeting, the elders had mentioned what, you know, I was being supported and such. Well, actually, they won't even mention it, but one of the men in the congregation raised their hand and said, I guess he saw that I got a check for $1,000 after reading the report, and he said, I thought that we were supporting Stan $800 a month rather than, you know, $200 a week. In other words, he was, for some reason, begrudging me $200 in that particular paycheck. And I remember the preacher, older man, who had a lot of experience, his name is Bob McDonald, a good man, but he said, Stan, you have had your first meeting with the brethren. Now, I have to admit a little bit. There's a little bit of cynicism in that a little bit. But the fact is, he had seen it. He had seen an attitude that some Christians have, and often it will impact the support of the local man. I'm very grateful that that's not the case here, was I? But that in effect, when that money goes into the treasury, because I may have a say with regard to the treasury, especially if they're not older, as to how it's going to be spent, that in fact it's my money, or I'm covetous with regard to that money. I mean, Judas was an example of that. He had the purse and the monies that were given in the apostles, and they pulled together for the purpose of their support and buying food and such. You'll remember he coveted that money and took of it because of his covetousness and his avarice. So we need to keep in mind that it's the Lord's money, and it is designed to do work. And as a congregation of God's people, we should be happy and willing to do that work and not be miserly in that regard. And also, again, and this is, of course, the primary point being made here, is that we should be very much willing and sacrificial in our giving so that more work can be done and more funds be available for that. Did you speak as well? Same time, too? Did you have something? Okay, just, I thought I heard two voices at once. Anybody else in this matter? Okay, good. Then you'll notice that covers the concept of giving voluntarily. I do want, just because it doesn't take much to do it, we've got a couple minutes, right? Is that the second?
Second.
Okay, then I'm going to stop talking now. We'll let it in next week. Thank you all for coming.